Pirkei de Eliezer, Perek Lamed. We've been discussing the last few fucking the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu. So now we're up to the 9th test. The 9th test we spoke about earlier when we went through the chart. The 9th test, according to Pirkei de Eliezer, it seems that the test is the fact that Yishmael, Avraham Avinu's son, went off the derech. There's other ways to learn it. Also, could be the fact that he had to send Yishmael away. That was the test. There's a Shiloh also we spoke about at that point, whether you count sending away Yishmael and sending away Hagar as one test, two tests. Well, there's different things that come up in the topic. All right, let's start the parak. Nisayan Hatshi, beginning of parak Lamed. Nisayan Hatshi, the 9th test. It's like this. Yishmael noled bekeshes v'nisraba bekeshes. Shenamar vahi reve kashos. Yishmael was born in a keshes, a bow, like a bow and arrow, a bow. And he grew up with a bow, like a bow and arrow. Shenamar, it says in the pasuk, vahi reve kashos. That Yishmael grew up to be a reve kashos, a person who shot arrows.
What does it mean he was
born in a keshes? So what are we talking about over here? So the Marzu says, and it could be that this is like a Pashat way of understanding it, it means that Yishmael was born under the mazel of Keshes, the mazel of the bow and arrow, which, if I remember correctly, is the mazel of the month of Kislev. Right? And you know, the Gemara says in Misach Shabbos, Daf Kufnun Vav, it says that if a person is born in the mazel of Madin, which is the red planet or Mars or whatever, so then he's going to have a teva that's going to make him do things that have to do with the red, the blood. Either he's going to be a murderer, or he's going to be a moil, or a sheikhid, or something like that. So the kavan of the Medrash here, according to the Marzu, is that Yishmael was born in the mazel of Keshes, the mazel, which is a month, which I think it's the month of Kislev. So that he was born in the mazel that has to do with a bow and arrow. So he grew up with the bow and arrow. That's the mahus of Yishmael, that he grew up with the bow and arrow. Umam has just started right now, so that's one way of understanding it. That's what the Marzu says. The Radal rejects this pshat. He says it's a rachok tikka pshat. Rather, what the Radal says, what it means is that Yishmael was noilad bekeshes, is it's talking about the nevuah of Yishmael's birth. When Hagar, we know the story in Parshas Lach Lecha, when Hagar was pregnant and she was being mevazah Sarah, so Sarah sent her off, and the Malach told her, don't worry, you're going to give birth to a kid, he's going to be a wild man, his hand is going to be in everything, and he's going to be involved in all kinds of different things. So there was a special nevuah that Hagar was going to have a son. We just started, don't worry. Hagar is going to have a son who's going to be involved with the field and all these different things. So the Radal understood what that means, is that he's going to be attached to Perek Lamed. He's going to be attached to the hunting, to the field, the bow and arrow, a wild man. That's what he does. So it was Nelad Bekeshes. He was born already. When he was born, we already knew that he was going to have this trait. Vinisraba Bekeshes, and when he grew up, we saw that Hitaka did have this trait, and he was involved with the hunting and bow and arrows, etc. That's what the Radal said. The Bayis HaGadol says a slightly different pshat. Bayis HaGadol says that when it says Yishmael Noled Bekeshes, Vinisraba Bekeshes, he wants to change the Girsa. It says Yishmael Noled, not Bekeshes, with the bow and arrow, through the bow and arrow, Noled Mekeshes. He was born through Keshes, which he understands that the word keshes over here doesn't mean bow, like we're saying bow and arrow. That's what keshes is. Bayis HaGadol says that keshes means like as a lashon of like kasha, of like difficult or strong, or hard. And he said that what the Medrash means to say is that Yishmael was born from somebody who was like strong-willed. Hagar was had a kshius arif. She had a certain character trait that she was like tough and gruff, etc. So when it says that Yishmael was born from Keshes, from somebody who was tough and gruff, and when he grew up, that's how he grew up, to be tough and gruff, and he had these bad midas where he was you know, angry and nasty and these type of things. And that's what it means in the Medrash. But V'haya netel keshes v'chitzim v'haya yera achar ha'oifes. Yishmael would take a bow and arrow, and he would shoot at the after the birds. He would practice hunting with the birds. The Radal brings the Girsa and the Yal is that he would v'haya yera achar ha'pargud. He would shoot after, behind the fence or behind the curtain. The Radal understood that what that means is that he would shoot behind the curtain so that like Avraham Avinu wouldn't see him being involved in hunting. Then he has a different Girsa. It was achar ha'pargiyais. That Yishmael was shooting pargiyais or small birds. So he doesn't say this, but I would assume that the point of saying small birds is because a small bird, any bird, it's not as is a moving target. So you have to be really trained in order to properly hit a bird with a bow and arrow. But a small bird is even more difficult. So like he was like mamish, a skilled expert, a marksman in bows and arrows. That's what I understand the Midrash is trying to say. Upam achas, one time, ro'o es Yitzchak yeshev levadai. He saw his brother Yitzchak sitting by himself. V'yara alav chetz lahargoi. And he took his arrow and shot his arrow at Yitzchak in order to kill him. Ro'o so sora v'higid al Avram. So Sarah saw this and she told Avram Avinu, kazeh v'chazeh asa Yishmael Yitzchak. Such and such is what Yishmael did to Yitzchak. He took an arrow and he tried to kill him, whatever. Rather, you know, I can't live like this, that my son Yitzchak is going to be under threat from his older brother. We have to get rid of him. Ella, rather, Sarah said to him, Amoid uchsev liyitzchak kol mashish b'kadosh baruch hu liten lecha ulo zarecha. Rather, get up and write a document to Yitzchak attesting to the fact that you're bequeathing to him everything that Hashem had promised to give you and your descendants. The way the Radal has the Gersa, the next word is Bechayacha. In your lifetime, and we spoke about earlier, if you remember way back, Perek Beis, we spoke about how was it that Avraham Avinu was able to give all of his, to bequeath all of his possessions to Yitzchak and exclude Yishmael. So one of the ways that, one of the heterim, because the Gemara says that you're not allowed to give away the inheritance from one kid to another kid. So how could Avraham Avinu do that? So we said one of the heterim was that he gave all of his possessions to Yitzchak as a present while he was still alive. So it wasn't considered an inheritance. It was giving him a present. So if you understand like that, so saying, Sarah said, write down that you're giving to Yitzchak everything that Hashem said, Liten locha ulzarecha bechayacha, in your lifetime, meaning the heter, that you're allowed to do this to exclude Yishmael from the Yerusha, from the inheritance, is by if you write this down, bechayacha. The other girsa is that the word bechayacha is really chayacha, and it's going on the next part. Chayacha, well, we can read it this way. Chayacha, because I swear, she'ein ben ha'ama zeh yerish im b'ni im Yitzchak. I swear that the son of this maidservant, the son of Hagar Yishmael, is not going to inherit with my son Yitzchak. They're not going to split the inheritance. My son Yitzchak is your legitimate heir, and Yishmael is an illegitimate child. Not illegitimate child, but he's illegitimate when it comes to the inheritance. Shinema, as it says in the Pasuk, Vatemel Avram, she said to Avram, Goresh ha'oma zeis ve'ezbina. Goresh, send away, banish this maidservant and her son, and that's what I want you to do. Right, Agav, we find different averas when we're talking about Yishmael, like what did Yishmael do? So here it says that he took a bow and arrow and he wanted to kill Yitzchak. Last week we spoke about how the midah of Yishmael is the midah of Znus. So it says in the pasuk, "Vatera Sara as Ben Hagar mitzachik." The pasuk just says that Sara saw the son of Hagar being mitzachik, and the lashon of mitzachik literally means playing. Yishmael was playing, and somehow Yishmael's quote unquote playing made Sara upset, and she said, "You know, send them away." So what was this playing? So Rashi and Chumash says that playing either refers to shfichas damim, and he brings a pasuk, and that's what it seems to be saying over here in Pekah de Blazer, that shfichas damim, murder. His playing was, you know, let's play, I'm going to kill you, right? Or Rashi says the other girsa in the Chumash, Rashi says that the playing here refers to Avodah Zarah, because it says it uses this lashon of playing when it's talking about the Egel Azav. And you could add a third pshat that the lashon of playing of Misachik and Yerei Chetz has to do with Arayas as well. So we find all these different nekudas about Yishmael. Kilei Arayis, Shvichas Damim, Avodah Zarah, the big three. Okay. Let's go later. Amra Sarah le'Avram. Sarah said to Avram Avinu, "Ksav get gerushin, write a document of divorce. Vishalach es ha'amah hazayis uvinah me'alai u'me'albani. Write a document of divorce and send away this maidservant Hagar and her son Yishmael from upon me and from upon my son." The Radal explains that from upon me means that send away Hagar so that she won't be like a competition against me. Send away Yishmael so he won't be a competition against my son Yitzchak. From this world and from the next world, we want to be completely separated from them. We have, you know, Sarah and Yitzchak on one side of the place, and Yishmael, Hagar and Yishmael on the other side. We want to be completely separate. Our faiths should never be intertwined. Not in this world, not in the next world. We don't want anything to do with them. Send them away. So the Lashon the Medrash says was that he said to her, she said to him, write a bill of divorce, a get gerushin, a get, right? And also Targum Yonasan in Parshas Vayera also says this, that Sarah told Avram Avinu that he should write a get to her. We'll speak more about that in a few minutes. But one point over here that Bais HaGadol makes is that where do we see an allusion to the fact that Sarah wanted Avram Avinu to write a get to Hagar? So he finds 2 points in the Lashon of the Pasuk. One point is where it says, "Vatamel Avram Garesh Hamazayis, send her away." And Lashon Garesh is what we call Lashon Chazal called Lashon Gerushin. Gerushin is called divorce in Lashon of Chazal. So Garesh her means literally means send her away, but in Lashon Chazal, Garesh also means divorce. So that's one point. And the other point is where it says in the pasuk that we'll see in a few minutes. It says, "Vayashkim Avram." Avram woke up in the morning, vayikach lechem vechem asmayim, and he took water and he took bread and he took a flask of water, and it says vayishalcheha, he sent her away. And the lashon of vayishalcheha, sent her away, is also the same expression that the Torah uses when it's talking about a get. It says revuchasa v'nasan lov v'shulcha mebeit, you send her away from your house. So it's the same idea of sending away. Okay. Let's go right there. Umikol harois. Fine. So Sarah says to Avram Avinu, "You know, I can't take this anymore. This lady Hagar and her son Yishmael is threatening my son. We can't take it. We have to get rid of them." Right. So Avram Avinu didn't know what to do. Umikol harois shabo al Avram hayakashav a rabbi einav hadover ezemayid. From all the bad things that happened to Avram Avinu, this matter in specific was very difficult and very bad in his eyes. Shenema, it says in the pasuk, the matter was very bad in the eyes of Avram, the matter concerning his son. It's not clear what was bothering him so much. Was the fact that Yishmael went off the derech, was that what was bothering him so much? Or the fact that Sarah was saying get rid of him? It's not so clear in the kavanah of the Medrash and the Pesukim.
That
he has to do with it.
Okay, so go and tell her. Like you, Sarah, go and tell her. No, he was the one
who had to tell her.
He would have to send her away.
I hear. Okay. So what is Avram going to do? Rabbi Yehuda says, that night, HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself to Avram Avinu. Omoloi, Hashem said to him, Avram, iyata yedeir shahisa sara ru'uyalacha li'isha me'me'ei ima. He said, Avram, don't you know that Sarah is fitting to you from as a wife from the womb of her mother? V'hichavertacha ve'eishis nu'recha, and she's your friend, and she's the wife of your youth. I wrote down the side over here that Seder Deris in the year Shnas Aleph, Taftaf Kuf Ayin Gimel, he makes a cheshvin to tell us that Avram Avinu married Sarah when he was 25 years old. So she's the wife of his youth, his first wife. Right? It's a special thing. Loi nikris Hagar ishtecha. We don't find that Hagar is ever called your wife. V'loi nikris Sarah shivchascha. And we don't find that Sarah is ever called your maidservant. Shneimar, it says the pasuk, Avasara ishtecha yeledes lecha bein, your wife Sarah is going to give you a son. V'hagar l'nikras ishtecha ela shivchascha, and Hagar is always called your servant, never called your wife. So Hashem is telling her that Hashem is telling Avraham Avinu that Sarah is your, she's your soulmate, she's your wife of your youth, she's your best friend, she's everything for you. So we're going to say, Hashem is going to say, listen to what Sarah says. You should choose Sarah over Hagar. It's an interesting thing the Radal talks about over here, is that we mentioned before in Perek Chaf Ches that Avraham Avinu has two types of nevuahs. He has nevuahs at night, and then he like other Nevi'im, like in the middle of the night he sees a vision, and then he has other, like a Kol HaChazayin, and other nevuahs which are more clear nevuahs of Amara. So the question is, why over here did we dafka understand that this nevuah where Hashem is going to tell Avraham Avinu listen to Sarah, why did we understand that it's dafka at night? Where do we get that from? So the Radal says that we're going to find in a few minutes, we're going to see that Avraham Avinu woke, the next stage that's going to happen is Avraham Avinu is going to wake up in the morning and then send her off. So what's the Indian of waking up in the morning? So that would we would assume that the Indian is because he wants to be Mekayim, the Nevuah that he got from Hashem, right away. The first thing in the morning, he goes and sends, and that's when he sent her off, right? Early in the morning. Right? Because he wants to be Mekayim, the Nevuah. Now the question is, if the Nevuah happened in the middle of the day, so then Lav Dafka is waking up in the morning and sending her off, the first available opportunity that he has to be Mekayim, to fulfill the Nevuah. So therefore, it has to have been that he had this Nevuah at night. That's what Radal says.
No, so
we said before that Avraham Avinu had two types of nevuahs in Perek Chaf Ches. He had what's called a chazayin, which is at night, and Avraham Avinu had also a certain level of nevuah, which is called a mara. In the beginning of Perek Chaf Ches, we discussed this at length. It could be that the Rambam would say what you're saying, because the Rambam understood that Avraham Avinu wasn't more special than any other Navi. But it seems that Pirkei de Belezer understood that in some ways Avraham Avinu was similar to the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. So what does Hashem say? It says, V'chol shedibra Sara be'emes dibra. Everything that Sarah said to you is true. Everything she said is true. This story that Yishmael was trying to kill you, it's like it's true. Don't doubt what she says. Al yera be'enach ala nav ala masacha. It shouldn't be bad in your eyes, what this matter about the child and about Meitzer and Shnema Vayemer Lakim Al Avram Al Yer Beinach Al Anar Val Masacha. Rather, Hashem said to him, Kol Hashem Elacha Sarah Asay. Everything that Sarah tells you to do, you should do. Right. So Hashem's basically telling Avram Avinu, don't make your own judgment of what to do. Just listen to what Sarah says and go with her. And of course, we know Rashi says in Chumash that Sarah was on a higher level of nevuah than Avraham Avinu, so she had a better insight in what to do. So Hashem is saying, you should be machnia yourself to her decision. Don't try to make your own decision. Possibly because Hashem is saying that you're negeh bedavar, you can't be impartial because you have a certain love for Yishmael that not necessarily Sarah has. So because of that, you're drawn more towards having rachmanis on Yishmael. That if you were being objective, you wouldn't have otherwise had. So saying, listen to Sarah, don't listen to your own instincts. When it's said over here that Hagar is never called his wife, it's always called a shifcha. So the Radal points out an interesting thing, that even after he gets rid of Hagar, we still find that she's called his shifcha. We'll speak about that also in a few minutes. Hishkim Avram Babaker. Avraham Avinu woke up in the morning, v'kasav get gerushin, and he wrote a document of divorce, v'chasav lav nasan la, and he wrote it for her and he gave it to her. As the Radal points out, that's the lashon of the pasuk in Parshas Kisetze when it's talking about writing a get. So it says v'kasav nasan. So here the Midrash is mimicking the expression used in the Torah over there. Vayishalchaha. And he sent her from upon himself and from upon his son Yitzhak, from this world and from the next world. Again, as I said before, to sort of split their fates, that they're no longer intertwined. Shneimar says in the pasuk, Avraham woke up in the morning. And again, we, as I mentioned already before, why does it say that Avraham Avinu did it in the morning? So the Radal says because he wants to show his zrizus, his zealousness to fulfill the nevuah that Hashem said to him that you should divorce her, get rid of her, like Sarah said. So he got early in the morning, you know, just like we do a bris milah, the first thing in the morning, right after shacharis. So that's what he did. The first thing in the morning, he wanted to be mekayem this nevuah. He sent Hagar away. Oh. So then the Radal says in parentheses, he says another pshat. It says, or you could say that it's not true that it's possible. I'm pretty sure it's not true that it's possible. But there's a halacha that you're not supposed to give a get or write a get at night, because get has to do with Beis Din, and Beis Din only sits during the day. So at least it's for sure l'chatchila you're not supposed to write a get or give a get at night. I don't think it puzzles it.
But there's a discussion in the Mishnah if you could write again in the morning and give it at night, and write it at night and give it at the morning. I think it's the same night, because the same day you could. I remember. That's a check. I think that there's a problem with
9 days. Right. Okay. That could be the definition, because then the date changes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But the Radal says that it could be another reason why he did it in the morning, is he couldn't do it at night, because at night you're not supposed to write again. Fine. It says in the pasuk, "Vayikach lechem v'chem asmayim." Avraham Avinu took bread and a flask of water. Now this passage over here is a little bit difficult to understand exactly what's happening, but hopefully we'll get it clear. Shulcha beget gerushin, he sent her away with a get gerushin, a bill of divorce. V'lokach es hadardur v'kosher b'masneha, and he took a dardur and he tied it to her thigh. K'dei she'esichef achareha leida shehi shifcha, so that people will be able to follow her and know that she's a shifcha. People, I think that's what seichef means. I didn't really have a chance.
A
dardur. We'll try to define the word dardur in a moment. I think I didn't really have a chance to look up what the word seichef means, but I think the word seichef means shuffle the kuf. It means that there's going to be some sort of sign on her body that shows that she's a slave. Now, what's a dardur? So the Radal brings the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, which uses the word dardur, daf lamed beis amud aleph in the Avodah Zarah. The Gemara uses the word dardur as it means a flask, some sort of like leather type of container that you could hold water in it. The Bais HaGadol says that a dardur is a tsa'if, a scarf. It's like he tied like a scarf to her thigh to show that. To show that she was what's it called? To show that she's a servant, a slave. What? Why couldn't she just take it off? I don't know. I also don't understand why he did it before. Like, what? Why does this symbolize that she's a slave? And who cares that she's a slave? Or what's he trying to prove? I haven't been able to figure that out. But what?
He didn't free her as a slave.
Oh, so we'll get to that in a few minutes, but that's a good question.
Well, he didn't free her as a slave, but my question was, over here it says that he was not called his wife, and yet here he's giving her a get. What's the get for?
Well, so we'll see.
And
right, so Shem, we'll try to answer all of these questions. Okay, so what's a dardor that he tied to her? So the Radal says that a dardor is a flask, I guess, that would hold the water. Bais HaGadol says that it's talking about a scarf. The Marzu says it's some sort of basket or a barrel, etc. So the question is, why did he tie this to her to show that she's a shifcha? So the Radal, if I understand the Radal correctly, what the Radal is saying is that he needed to show that she's a shifcha, because if he's sending her off with just bread and a flask of water, it looks really bad for him, because it's like, well, you're sending her away, you'll give her, you know, a month severance package, and give her some more money, give her more food, you're just giving her some of your camels, something. All you're giving her is water and some bread. Like, that's harsh. So the Radal understands that the reason why Avraham Avinu did that was because he wanted to show that he's taking the Nevuah seriously. The Nevuah was that, you know, you should treat Sarah like you should treat Sarah like your wife and treat Hagar like your Shifcha. So he's saying, okay, I'm treating her like a slave. She's a slave, I'm sending her away, I'm not going to treat her like... it's hard to say this, but I'm saying, like, I'm not going to treat her like I would normally treat a human being. I think that's what the Radal is saying. It sounds very harsh, but I think that's what he's trying to say. So that's why he's trying to show that she's a shifcha, she's a slave. I'm sending her away. This person that I'm sending away is a slave. She's not like a regular person. If I had a guest and I would send them away, so I would give them more money, more food, more provisions, animals, whatever. I would give them regular things. But her, since she's a slave, so I'm showing you that she's a slave, so she doesn't get more, she doesn't deserve more. I'm not sure exactly if you guys have better insight to that. Of Eliomi Izmir in Vloy Oid Ella says a slightly different idea. He says that we're going to see later on in this parak, not tonight, but probably next week, that when Avraham Avinu goes to visit Yishmael and Hagar later on, so he sort of comes to give them Musar. He wanted to see where they're holding in life and what are they up to and what have they accomplished, and he comes to give them Musar. So Rabbi Eliomi Izmir says that, like, if people would see that she's a free person, then it would be really weird that, like, some random guy comes over to her to give them Musar and see where they're holding in life. So Avraham Avinu Dafka had to show people that no, she's still a shifcha, in order so that he would be justified in following up on her later on. I think that's what. No, it's not so clear, but I think that's what he's saying. Interestingly, it says in the Medrash over here, we said that he tied whatever this dardur is, he tied it to her thigh. Right? So if you look in the pasuk says that he put something, some al shikhma, on her shoulders. What if he tied it on her thigh? So how did he put it on her shoulder? Vayitin, it doesn't say that. It says Vayitin el Hagar. He gave to Hagar some al shikhma. She put it on her shoulder. Ves hayaled, and also the kid he gave with her. Vayishalcha, and he sent her off. Doesn't say that she put the kid on her shoulder.
Rashi
does say that. Rashi says, Rashi says that he put the kid on her shoulder as well. But it says and the kid. It says he gave her. Doesn't say what he gave her something, and she put it on her shoulder. And the kid also she put on her shoulder, according to Rashi.
The kid was already at least 13.
That's what I wanted to say, yeah.
According to Rashi, he's so sick that he couldn't...
Yes, he was at least 13.
That's why.
We'll try to figure out exactly how old he was also later on.
When
he was sick?
When he was sick.
It could be that's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it. That was part of the Nevuah of choosing Sarah and Yitzchak over Yishmael and Hagar. Even if Yishmael is sick, you still choose him. You still choose Yitzchak and Sarah. You don't have Rachmanis. It sounds harsh. It's hard for me to say these words even, but that's what it seems is the pshat.
Avraham Avinu is going to grow up. Okay. That's
what it was. Avraham
also took his son.
One thing that's always bothered me, that Esav wasn't any worse than Ishmael.
Right.
I mean, Esav also did, you know, murder and idol worship and Arias.
Right.
But nobody ever sent him away.
Right. I mean, well, first of all, Esav did a very good job at fooling everyone else. See, Yishmael, everyone knew he was a wild man.
He did whatever he wanted.
Esav,
I mean, the day of Avinu's funeral.
I'll give you a marshal. Esav is like the Pope. Yeah, the Pope comes in. He's wearing a kittel and a big yarmulke, and he looks like he's the biggest tzaddik in the world. But he's like, the Pope was like the source of all tumah in the world. That's what Esav is. Esav Mamish looked like a big tzaddik. He was able to fool Yitzhak Avinu to extent.
Do whatever he's doing with Lomit.
Well, whatever I'm saying. Al Kapanim, okay.
Shmuel was busy screaming at his speeches in Arabic. They knew what he was. He put on loudspeakers. They could hear it. I've never heard
him. Like Chazal tells that Esav is compared to a pig. Because a pig sends out its hooves and says, look, I have split hooves. Because on the outside it looks like it's kosher.
Yeah.
But on the inside it doesn't chew its cut. So it's really not kosher. On the outside, it looks like it's kosher, but on the inside, it's not kosher.
That's assuming that Esav is better than Yishmael, because even that he's putting on a show, that's already a sign that he's better. No? It means that he has some sort of bullshit. No?
Yeah.
Like it says by Yopis.
In a way, it's a little bit better because it's saying like on the outside he's better, but on the inside he's worse. But in a way, it's like, well, maybe if he knows what he should be holding, so then he should try to work on himself. Yishmael, stop a wild man. Esav is a little bit, you know, he's a wild man, but he tries to make himself look like he's not.
I think that's not the finish, I'm sorry. I think that's
yeah.
At this point, like if the animal doesn't have both of the signs,
yeah,
and you find one that has one of the signs, don't eat it! It doesn't allow you to eat half of it. Or maybe they'll think, oh, it's a half kosher. No, that's the biggest finish. Even though it has one of the signs, you're not allowed to eat it.
Okay, fine. No, that's pasha pshat. But I'm saying that there's an idea that that the pig is kosher on the outside and not kosher on the inside.
Yeah.
V'loy oid. Not only this. Ela kisharatz Avram liris is Yishmael benoy v'liris is aderech shehalchu ba. Also, Avram Avinu tied this thing to Hagar. The way the Bais HaGadol understands this, the pshat over here.
By the way,
1 second. The Bais HaGadol understands the pshat over here is that. What we're saying is that not only did he tie this thing to her so that people will know that she's a shivcha, but also because later on when he's going to want to go visit Yishmael, so he was going to want to know where they went. So basically what he did was he tied, you think about it like this, you tie a red scarf to the lady's foot, and then you watch her going down the road and you can see which way she's going and you can follow with your eye as far as you can see, and then you know, okay, this is the way they went. And then later on, if I want to follow them and catch up with them, so I know they went this way. That's what the Bais HaGadol explains it. The Marzu says that, no, V'loy Oid is going on what he did for them. That he accompanied them as far as he could see them going down the road. That's what the Marzu says. The Bais HaGadol, the Radal, says that He disagrees with the Bais HaGadol's pshat because he says that you can't beat it because that he wanted to follow where she's going so he could catch up with them, because we're going to see later on that he went to visit Yishmael 3 years later. So if it's 3 years later, it's hard to say that, oh, because I saw her going down this road because of the thing on her scarf or the scarf on her foot, so then I'll be able to know where she is because it's 3 years later. So why should I tell you where she is now? Rather, he takes the Radal says that the Vilna Gaon takes out these two lines over here in the Medrash about V'loy Oid Ella. The Zayin has another pshat that it's saying that not only did Avraham Avinu was he so nice to them that he gave them bread and water when they were leaving, but also he had such a cherishment of them and endearment of them that he continued to think about them and he wanted to visit them later on. Which the Zayis Ranan is, in a way, the exact opposite of what we've been saying until now.
Where does it say that he visited Yishmael 3 years later?
Later on in this parak. We're going to say it later on. Not tonight, probably next week. So it says that he's going to go... Okay, whatever. Fine. So we have some unanswered questions over here. We'll start like this. I'll go in chronological order. I had a question like this. In Targum Yonasan, as we've mentioned before, Targum Yonasan and Chumash, in a lot of ways, mimics the different midrashim that are brought down in Pirkei Eliezer. So I asked this question in Targum Yonasan. Targum Yonasan says, in Parshas Lech Lecha, it says when Hashem, when Sarah gave Hagar, her servant to Avram Avinu to marry, Atikach Sarah Ishes Avram and Sarah Mitzvah Shivkasa, and he gave it to her as a wife. So it says in Targum Yonasan, Parak Tes Zayin, Pasuk Beis, It says that Sarah said to Avraham Avinu, "Bono shivchasi ula ibana memena." Right, have relations with my shivcha. Maybe we'll be able to build a family through her. So Targum Innocent says, "Ulevas amasi, go upon my servant va'acharina, and I'm going to free her. Ma'im is bani mina. Maybe I'm going to be able to build a family from her." So Targum Innocent says that Sarah freed Hagar before she gave her over to Avraham Avinu to marry her. That's what it says in Targum Innocent, Parshas Lech Lecha. Now, in Parshas Vayera, in the story that we're talking about over here, it says Avraham Avinu, he wrote it. Targum Innocent says Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Yedalad. It says that Avraham Avinu wrote a get, and he sent off Hagar with a get, and it says the same thing as the pig of the blizzard. It says, and he tied upon her something to show that she's a slave. Yeah. Now the question is like this: if she was already freed before he married her, if Sarah freed Hagar before Avraham Avinu married Hagar, so what are we saying over here later on in Parashas Vayera, that when Avraham Avinu sent off Hagar, he tied something to her to show that she's a slave? She's not a slave. Sarah already freed her before Avraham Avinu married her. You hear the kasha? In Parashas Lech Lecha it says that before Sarah gave Hagar over to Avraham Avinu to marry her, so Sarah, who was the master of Hagar, Hagar was Sarah's slave, so Sarah freed her. She freed her. Right? And now, in Parshas Vayera, when we're talking about Avraham Avinu sending off Hagar, so it says that he tied something to her to show that she's a slave. But she's not a slave. Sarah freed Hagar. Before he married her, she freed her. So now when you're sending her off, she's a slave?
Yeah. I wanted earlier to ask you about Avraham Avinu being married to a slave.
We'll get to that too. That's the next question.
For part of the question.
Yeah. That, in a way, that's part of the question.
And he had to send her, like, I don't know.
So when...
Did you forget to a slave? There's a get to slave, but it says the get, a get here, you told me it was a get, Isha.
Gerushin, right.
The Gerushin.
That's what it seems like. So we're gonna ask these questions. We're gonna have some geshmaka answers, but I don't know if we're gonna have a real solid answer, in my opinion at least. Okay, so this is the question that I asked. This contradiction, it seems, in Targum Yonasan. On one hand, it says that in Parshas Lech Lecha that Sarah freed Hagar before Hagar married Avram. On the other hand, in Parshas Vayera, it says that when Avram Avinu sent her off, he tied something to show that she's a shivcha. How could she be a shivcha if Sarah already freed her?
Can I try?
Huh?
Can
you try to answer it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a shivcha. She was freed. She got a gift, and she get back to being, you know, she went back.
She came back to being a
shifra.
So we're going to see somebody who says a very similar idea. We'll have to get to that. But this is a question I asked when I was a bacher many years ago, when I was a bacher in Lakewood. I used to go on Friday nights to the house of Rav Yitzhak Sorotskin. He's like the retired Rosh Hashiva of Tells. He lives in Lakewood. So I used to go Friday nights to his house for Chomashir. And it was like a Gishmak Matzav. They have cholent and singing. It was a very, very Hamish Matzav. So I was once in his house Friday night, and I asked him this question. So he, Rav Yitzhak Sorotskin, if you ever heard of him, he used to be Rosh Hashiva in Tells. He wrote a lot of Sfarim. Most of them are named Rinas Yitzchok or Gvuras Yitzchok, like on Siddur and on Yamim Tovim and on Shas and on Chumash and on Haftarah and on Tanakh. He has like tons and tons of Sfarim. Yeah, I think he has like four or five sets of Sfarim just on Chumash. Rinas Yitzchok and Gvuras Yitzchok, etc. So I was at his house. I asked him this question, and one of his farm was sitting on the table when I was talking to him. So he points to his sefer and he says, "Oh, look at my sefer. I talk about this." So I looked it up. I opened it up, and he says a very interesting answer. As I mentioned before, even after Hagar was sent away, etc., she's always referred to as the shifcha of Sarah, or the maidservant, or shivcha, etc. That's the lashon of the Torah. So why does the Torah continue to call her a servant even after she was already freed? or even after she married Avraham Avinu, etc., or whatever. So the Radal actually over here in the Hisophis Eis Beis, the Radal sort of talks about this, and the Radal says two ideas. He says, could be that even after she's no longer a Shifcha, the Torah still calls her a Shifcha because she used to be a Shifcha. That's one. And the second answer, the Radal says, is because even after she was no longer technically a Shifcha, she still acted towards Sarah in a subservient position. So she looked at Sarah as like her higher up. So the Torah looks at it as if as if Hagar is subordinate to Sarah. So uses a lashon as if she was her servant. That's what the Radal says. My Rabbi Yitzchak Soratsky in Rinas Yitzchak, he brings like this, that the Netziv in Hamek Dover, the Netziv says, what I would consider, says a shtickle wild word. He says that when Avraham Avinu, when Sarah freed Hagar in order to marry Avraham Avinu, so there was a stipulation in the freedom that Sarah gave to Hagar. Said that Hagar, I'm only freeing Hagar vis-a-vis Avraham Avinu, so Avraham Avinu can marry her. But vis-a-vis myself, I'm not freeing her. We're going to see somebody that says such a thing, but I don't know if this means that. I'm not sure if that's what the Netziv means. This is like, it's like mamish hair splitting, but it's like machai. This question is like obligates us to do some like heavy hair splitting over here. So he says that vis-a-vis Avraham Avinu, she's free, so Avraham Avinu can marry her, but vis-a-vis and etc. And vis-a-vis Sarah, she's considered a shivcha. So now, like when Avraham Avinu is listening to the nevuah that says, "Go with what Sarah said." So Sarah looked at her as a shivcha, so he tied something to her to show that, you know, she's still a shivcha. That's what the Netziv says, and that's what Rav Yitzchak Soratzkin brings down in his sefer to answer my question. That's one answer. Then this week, or last week, I think it was maybe even, I found that Zayis Ranan asks a similar question, more what Rabbi Epstein was asking, and he gives two answers that also will bring up an interesting discussion, but I don't know. The Zayis Ranan asks a question like this. The halacha is, obviously there's an idea called Kiddushin. Kiddushin is a spiritual, legalistic status change that when a man marries a woman, so there's a halachic, legalistic, spiritual bond between them called Kiddushin, right? Now this idea of Kiddushin only works if you marry somebody that you're allowed to marry, or that if you marry such a person, the Kiddushin works, right? If a person tries to marry their mother, the Kiddushin doesn't work because you're not allowed to marry your mother. So if a person tries to marry a Shifcha, the Kiddushin doesn't work because a Shifcha is not Jewish. Kiddushin can only work on a Jewish woman, right? A Shifcha is not Jewish, fully at least, right? So Kiddushin is not going to work. In fact, there's a law of marrying a Shifcha, of Lo Yeh Kaddish. Is an Isra that a man is not allowed to marry a Shifcha, according to many Rishonim. So the question is like this, as the Zayis Ranan asks it. He says, Mimar Avshach. It doesn't make any sense. Either way you go, it doesn't make any sense. If Hagar was a Shifcha, and that's why he tied the thing to her to show that she's a Shifcha, so why does the Medrash say that he gave her get gerushin, he gave her a bill of divorce? He was never married to her in the first place, because the marriage wouldn't work, because she's a Shifcha. And if she's not a Shifcha, and that's why he had to give her, really, or if you'll say the opposite way, right? If she really, she's not a Shifcha, and that's why he was able to marry her, because she's not a Shifcha, and that's why he had to give her a divorce, because it was a real marriage, because she's not a Shifcha, so why is he tying a thing to her to show that she's a Shifcha? She's not a Shifcha! That's what the Zayis Ranan asks. That's your question, but like a little bit souped up. You hear the question? So the Zayis Ranan answers two answers. First answer is like this. He said, this is a little bit lumdish. It says that the Medrash says that Hagar was the Nichse Milug of Avram Avinu and Sarah. Nichse Milug. Milug property. I have to define the term. Yeah, that's too hot in here, no? Is it hot in here? Can I make it a little bit lower? 23 is good? Should I turn it off? Yeah, I'll turn it off. It's good, it's okay if I turn it off or I fold it. He wanted to.
Sorry, I was called.
No, it's not a problem.
Said it. When a person, when a man or woman get married, so the property that the woman brings into the marriage can have one of two statuses. One is called nechse tzarzel, which basically means that you bring in this property into the marriage and it becomes completely the husband's, and then if for some reason the marriage is terminated upon the death of the husband while the wife is still alive, or if he divorces her, so then the husband is obligated to give her the value of that property at the time that they got married. That's called nechse tzarzel in barzel. Now nechse milug is a different status. Nechse milug is property that she brings into the marriage. The wife owns it, she completely owns it, she continues to own it, and when they get divorced, or if he dies before her, she gets to keep it afterwards. It doesn't get inherited by his inheritors. She gets to keep it. But the catch is that he gets to use it. And he reaps all the benefits of it. It's like the classical case is if we're talking about property. So if we're talking about property, it's on the tabu, on the county clerk will have her name listed as the owner of the property, but all the fruits from the trees on the property, he gets to sell the fruits and the money goes to him, it doesn't go to her. That's nechse miluk. A property that he owns the rights to the property, but she owns the actual property.
What happens when he dies and they have kids together? It doesn't go to their kids?
No, so in which case?
Either one.
If we're talking about, whatever, it's complicated. But when we're talking about his property, so his kids will equally divide his property, right? If she dies first, so then he automatically inherits all of her property. If he dies first, so again, his kids inherit his property, but nechse miluk, which belonged to her,
right.
it always belonged to her. Just he had rights to use it, so it just his inheritors lose the rights to use it, and she just gets.
Aren't their kids also her inheritors?
Yeah, but she's alive. She owns that property now.
And if she remarries,
If what? What's the case?
If she remarries after he dies.
But he dies, and then what?
He dies, and when she dies, their kids get it.
Right.
But if she
they get what?
Her property.
When she dies, so her children will equally. All of her children will equally split whatever she owned. Unless she was married, if she gets married to somebody else, so then the second husband will inherit everything that she owns when she dies.
And the kids in the first marriage get cut off.
Right, because husband comes before children. There's takanas. It's more complicated than that, really. What?
Weird thing to say.
That's what it is.
Husbands become four children.
Oh, you're being sarcastic.
She's married to somebody. She's got a ton of property. She's a very wealthy lady. She's married to somebody, and then her first husband, and they got a lot of kids, and her first husband dies. Then she remarries some guy. And then she dies, so the second husband gets everything and their kids get cut off?
Right. That's Mi'ikra Din, but there are certain takanas, I don't remember exactly the way it works, I can't say over, but to protect the kids that they get a certain percentage or something, like I don't remember exactly how it works. It's spoken about in the Shulchan Aruch in the end of Hilchos Ksubos. There's something called Takanas Tuli Tula, which is the institution of Toledo. Which the rabbis in Toledo made a certain decree that they tried to get out of this funny case. I don't remember exactly what they said, but it talks about that situation. Akuponim. So the Zayas Ranan says that Hagar was what we called Nichse Milug of Avram Avinu and Sarah. That really Sarah technically owned her. She was the owner of Hagar. She owned the slave, but Avram Avinu had the rights to use her. Yeah? Yeah. What? Wait, one second.
She's not allowed to
use the shipka. What? One second. So that when the expressions used in the Gemara is there's something called kinyan aguf, acquisition of the actual body, let's say, and then kinyan peris, which is the acquisition of the fruits of their labor or the fruits of whatever they what. What are you pointing to me?
I'm not going to say anything.
Which pasuk?
That one.
Okay. Not sure what you're trying to say.
I'm trying to say that it may explain the one that the person who, I don't remember who said that according to
let's
Sarah, she was the shifa, and Abraham, she was a free woman.
But that's what
she
said.
Yeah. Why? Because it says and Bilai and Zilpah, they also want to Yaakov Avinu marry her. Them. He married them, so and they kept being, they continued being
a shifa. Well, I didn't look at what the Mefarshim said, but Mesama, the Mefarshim will say over there that they were freed before he married them. It could be, I don't know, I have to look at it. But Al-Kapanah, so what we're saying here is that Avraham Avinu owned the rights to Hagar, and Sarah owned the goof of Hagar. Sarah owned her technically, and Avraham Avinu had the rights to use her. It's called Kinyan Peres and Kinyan Aguf. So what the Zayis Ranan wants to say is a big chiddush, and it doesn't. Okay, whatever. The Zayis Ranan wants to say that Avraham Avinu, before he married Hagar, he freed her in terms of her kinyan perus, but Sarah didn't free her in terms of the kinyan aguf. It's sort of a similar type of idea, but at this point, it would come out that she's a quasi shifcha, quasi not shifcha. Quasi shifcha, quasi, I don't want to forget. Quasi shifcha, quasi not shifcha, and therefore if he would do kedushin to her, the kedushin would work, at least misafik, and then if he wants to divorce her, he would have to give a get. So he says that's why he gave her a get, even though technically she was still a shifcha. The Zayis Ranan asks it as a question in the Pirkei D'Blizzer itself. Pirkei D'Blizzer says that he gave her a get, he tied a thing to show that she was a shifcha. So he's saying, no, he gave her a get because misafek, the kedushin worked because she was still a quasi shifcha. So when he married her, the kedushin worked. So he had to give her a get when he wanted to get rid of her. But since Sarah never freed the goof, the kin in a goof, so she's still a shifcha. So therefore, he tied a thing to her to show that she's a shifcha. That's the Zayis Ranan chat. It doesn't answer really the Targum Yonasan, because Targum Yonasan said that she freed him. It doesn't say that Avram freed her and Sarah didn't free her. So it doesn't really exactly answer my question, but it answers his question. Also, the lashon of the pasuk is vatitain, that she gave her. It's hard to say that Avram Avinu only freed her from what his rights and not from her rights. It's hard to say that. But the other pshat that the Zayis Ranan said is another thing that Rabbi Epstein wanted to say. It says in the pasuk in Parshas Lach Lecha when Avraham Avinu married Hagar. So the lashon of the pasuk is Vatiten esel Avraham isha loy li isha. She Sarah gave her Hagar to Avraham Avinu, her husband, to him as a wife. Loy li isha to Avraham Avinu as a wife. Says the Medrash that she gave him to him as a wife and not loy v'loy l'acherim, to him, to Avram, and not to others. What do you mean to him, not to others? Obviously that's what we're talking about, to him, not to others, right? So the Zayis Ranan explains that what it means is that Hagar made another stipulation in the freeing of Hagar. Sarah made a stipulation in the freeing of Hagar that she's only going to be free as long as she's married to Avraham Avinu. No, once she's no longer married to Avraham Avinu, we don't want her to marry somebody else. Once we're talking about somebody else, then she's no longer free and she comes back to being my slave. So that's what Rabbi Epstein was trying to say. That really she was a slave. And then Sarah freed her. And then she was able to marry Avraham Avinu. But no, now that Avraham Avinu gave her a divorce, and she goes back to being a slave. Because the whole stipulation in the freedom was that it's only as long as she's married to Avraham Avinu. She's no longer married to him, so she's no longer his slave. She's no longer his wife, then she goes back to being a slave. That's what the Zayis Ranan wants to say.
But it's funny.
It's very difficult.
Doesn't it require some maneuvers? Like you have to have a contract. once you get a get, she's a free woman.
You're right. I spoke to a friend of mine. His name is Yaakov Shor. He's actually a cipher, and he used to work for the Beis Din in Baltimore, writing Gittin. So he's also very, he knows the halachas of Gittin very well, and he's you know, I wouldn't say necessarily mamish an expert, but he knows what he's talking about. I told him the Zayis Ranan. He says it doesn't make sense because it gets puzzled, because there's a halacha that you need krisus. The Torah says that a get is called a get krisus. It's a document that causes a cutting off, an incision. It makes a separation that you, this person and this person are no longer connected to each other. Now, you can make a stipulation that'll say we will only be no longer connected to each other if such and such happens. But it has to be that at the end of the day, there's a complete cut and separation between the two. Now, if we understand that's talking about a get isha when you divorce a woman, but the halacha is that a get isha and a shtar shichur, a document of freedom for a slave, have the same halachas. It also needs what we call krisus, a cutting off. It has to make a clear cutting off between the two. So. Well, no, there's no pocket. This is not a pocket, this is a fake pocket. It's sealed. Okay, hold on. What was I saying? It has to be a complete separation. So, in this situation, it's not really a complete separation, because it's like, it's only a complete separation as long as she's she marries him. But then when she's no longer married, when Hagar's no longer married to Avraham Avinu, so then she's no longer separated from me, and she goes back to being my slave. So it's very hard to say that works as a separation.
That quoted that Sarah gave Hagar to Avraham, the wife?
Yeah, Loi Lisha.
Is that a problem from when it said over here that Hagar was never called his wife?
No. That was another unanswered question. So I think that what the way I read it, I carefully read it, that medrash, is that the Torah never calls Hagar Avraham Avinu's wife, and the Torah always calls Sarah Avraham Avinu's wife. Meaning, even if Hagar was technically Avraham Avinu's wife, but the Torah never calls her that. It doesn't give her that legitimacy of calling her his wife. That's the way I understood what the Medrash was saying. It's not saying she wasn't his wife. She was his wife, but the Torah didn't recognize that as like a legitimate, like she's his wife. No, she happens to be his slave who through technical reasons we're able to make it that he can marry her, but she's not his wife. They always say like neshama is made up of two parts, a male and a female, right? So every person is really only half a person. The Gemara says in Yevamos, call ish, call Adam. She ain't like isha, ain't like Adam. He's not a person. When the Mefarshim says, "Why is he not a person?" Because a person alone is only half a person. You have to, when you're married, so then I'm a half and you're a half, and together we're a whole person, right? So, who was Avraham Avinu's other half? It wasn't the Nevuah is saying that it wasn't Hagar. Hagar wasn't his soulmate. Hagar wasn't his complementary. Hagar was someone who he happened to marry, but Sarah was really his wife. He asked the same thing like anyone who had two wives, like which one was his soulmate? Which one was one that was connected to his neshama?
What about Yaakov? Who was Yaakov Avinu?
Yeah, who was Yaakov Avinu? Right? Which one was the Iker one? We'll say that it's Rachel, because we know that Rachel is a curse, a bias, and whatever. Okay, what up?
Was Hagar Ishan or Pilagish?
It doesn't say Pilagish by Hagar.
So,
it says Pilagish by
Isha, no?
Right, it says Isha. So, it says Pilagish by Keturah, which we'll get to Keturah at the end of this parak, if it's the same person. But
that is a different relationship. According to Rashi, it was the same person, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that was
a
different.
Okay. Should we go further, or we just stop here? Stop? Okay. Fine.